Bijana Ballaba Giri Badadhari. Gopi Jana Ballaba Giri Badadhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Shrimad's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON BBD Founder Chara, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Jaya Vishnupad, Paramahansa Paravajikacharya, Stotarasata Shri Shrimad's Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai, Ananta Gaudiya Vaishnavinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Sikaho, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shamakunda Radhakunda Giri Gopadam Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Jamuna Maya Ki Jai, Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtana Ki Jai, Brihat Madanga Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gurung, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 14, Text 25. Smasana Chakra Nila Duli Dumra. Smasana Chakra Nila Duli Dumra. Vikirna Vidyota Jata Kalapa. Vikirna Vidyota Jata Kalapa. Bashma Vagunatmala Rukma Deho. Bashma Vagunatmala Rukma Deho. Devas Tribir Pashyati Devaraste. Devas Tribir Pashyati Devaraste. Shmasana Chakra Nila Duli Dumra. Vaikarna Vidyota Jata Kalapaha. Bashma Vagunta Mala Rukma Deho. Devas Tribi Pashyati Devaraste. Vaishnavis. Shmashana, burning crematorium, chakra anila, whirlwind, duli, dust, damra, smoky, sorry, dumra, smoky, vikirna vidyota, thus smeared over beauty. Jatakalapaha, bunches of matted hair. Basma, ashes. Avagunta, covered by. Amala, stainless. Rukma, reddish. Deha, body. Devaha, the demigod. Tribir, with three eyes. Pashyati, sees. Devara, younger brother of the husband. Te, your. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva's body is reddish, and he is unstained, but he is covered with ashes. His hair is dusty from the whirlwind dust of the burning crematorium. He is the younger brother of your husband, and he sees with his three eyes. So this is Kashyapa Muni who just spoke. Purport. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity, nor is he in the category of Vishnu or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is far more powerful than any living entity up to the standard of Brahma. Yet he is not on an equal level with Vishnu. Since he is almost like Lord Vishnu, Shiva can see past, present, and future. One of his eyes is like the sun, another is like the moon, and his third eye, which is between his eyebrows, is like fire. He can generate fire from his middle eye. And he is able to vanquish any powerful living entity, including Brahma. Yet he does not live pompously in a nice house, etc. Nor does he possess any material properties, although he is the master of the material world. He lives mostly in the crematorium where dead bodies are burnt, and the whirlwind dust of the crematorium is his bodily dress. He is unstained by material contamination. Kashyapa took him as his younger brother because the youngest sister of Diti, that's Kashyapa's wife, was married to Lord Shiva. The husband of one's sister is considered one's brother. By that social relationship, Lord Shiva happened to be the younger brother of Kashyapa. Kashyapa warned his wife that because Lord Shiva would see their sex indulgence, the time was not appropriate. Diti might argue that they would enjoy sex life in a private place. But Kashyapa reminded her that Lord Shiva has three eyes called the sun, moon, and fire, and one cannot escape his vigilance any more than one can escape Vishnu. Although seen by the police, a criminal is sometimes not immediately punished. The police wait for the proper time to apprehend him. The forbidden time for sexual intercourse would be noted by Lord Shiva, and Diti would meet with proper punishment by giving birth to a child of ghostly character or a godless impersonalist. Kashyapa foresaw this, and thus he warned his wife, Diti. Om Gina Timanam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swaparantikam. So we're hearing about something very unusual here. This is very unusual. And I'm talking about some more than just Lord Shiva's appearance, you know, and his behavior. That's unusual. It's amazing that such an elevated personality, he's, you know, and he's, as Prabhupada says here, the master of the material world, and he's living in a crematorium. Actually, he doesn't even wear clothes. It states in some verse coming up, he's just in the crematorium, naked, and he's meditating, and the ashes of the people who are being burned there is just being blown all over the place, and his body is covered with that. And, you know, he's not worried about it. It's amazing right there in and of itself. But what's even, and that's unusual, but what's even more unusual is that this whole thing is happening, if you analyze what's going on. Okay, so you have Kashyapa Muni. Let's take him first. Kashyapa Muni is the son of Marichi. Marichi is one of the 10 mentally generated sons of Lord Brahma. Both Kashyapa Muni and his father Marichi are both considered Saptarishis, which means they're sages that are highly extolled within the Vedic literatures. They're considered very elevated sages, both of them, him and his father. Okay? So that's one point. Another point is Diti. She's a daughter of Daksha and Akshini, and she's one of the 12 daughters that was given by Daksha to Kashyapa Muni. Altogether, he had 18 wives, 12 from... what's his name? I just said it. Daksha, sorry. 12 from Daksha. And so she's from a highly cultured family. You know, Daksha is no slouch. I know he had a really bad run-in with Lord Shiva there, and that didn't go well for him. But, you know, he's a highly cultured person. I mean, you know, he was, when they had that ceremony, the Daksha Yagya, all the sages there were, when he entered, they all stood up. You know, they all appreciated that, wow, Daksha's, here's somebody, you know. He was, like, impressive by what he looked like, his effulgence, his education. You know, he was like a highly elevated demigod. So she's coming, that's her father. She's coming from that family. So there's absolutely no way that she would not have been trained and educated how to behave, you know, especially on this particular point. I mean, that would have been like practically, right, one of the most, you know, things that was emphasized the most in her upbringing. How to be a chaste, faithful, Vedic wife. So somehow or another, we're hearing a description of a situation where she's completely disregarding that. You know, the thing that might have been emphasized to her the most in her upbringing. This is very unusual. I'm not saying that it can't be explained. It can be explained. I'm going to offer one perspective. It can be explained from probably several different perspectives, including, you know, how it's this whole thing was required for this pastime to happen so that Lord Nrisingadev could eventually appear and you know, take care of Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, and how Prahlad Maharaj could, you know, come into the material world and give so many wonderful teachings, and etc. That's a perspective there. But another perspective is, just sort of at face value, is that she's been, as we hear, she's being influenced by lust, by desire. And so somebody could say, well, how is it possible that, you know, she could, you know, go down to this level of behavior? Because Prabhupada refers to her in a purport that's coming up, subsequent, that's the right word to use, right? In a subsequent purport, as Kasyapa Muni's prostitute wife. You know, so that's pretty strong language, right? He refers to her as that. So how is it that she got so bewildered? Well, Prabhupada says in the 15th chapter, the Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, the text 10, he says, persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. See, so in other words, people who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire, they lose all power to understand this philosophy of life. And that's what happened to her. You know, in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Avritam jnanam etena, jnanino nichavairina, kamarupena kunteya, duspadena alenacha. Thus a man's pure consciousness is covered by eternal enemy in the form of lust. That's what's happened to her. She's covered. I mean, she's totally covered, you know. And so this is, you know, really unusual to see this kind of behavior coming from somebody from that kind of background, right? And for Kashyapa Muni to kind of capitulate with that. You know, she's made, just to enumerate the mistakes she's making, one is she's acting on impulse, and by doing that she's disregarding all the training and education she would have received from her parents growing up. She's not respecting properly what her husband's doing at that time. Her husband was meditating. He was in meditation. Her husband, Kashyapa Muni, is not a devotee. You know, we use the word devotee for people who are devotees of either Vishnu or Krishna. He's a worshiper of Lord Shiva. If you want to call him a devotee, he's a devotee of Lord Shiva. But he was no Krishna Bhakta, okay? So he's meditating on the impersonal Brahman or worshiping Lord Shiva at that time. So she should have respected that, you know? I mean, that's right. And we're hearing about how grihasthas is supposed to work cooperatively to advance in their religious lives. And so here he is, you know, the husband's meditating on Lord Shiva there. And she's coming, and she's kind of, hey, come on, you know. It was totally the wrong thing to do, so that was a mistake. And then she got her attention, and she, you know, expressed to him what her desire was, and he told her no. He tried to dissuade her and explain to her that this is not an appropriate time. She disregarded that. It's the third mistake. And also, she disregarded the fact that this is my husband instructing me, because the wife is supposed to, you know, especially in this such a Vedic culture like this, the wife is supposed to be submissive to the husband. My husband's trying to dissuade me. Okay, you know, right away, she should just, okay, well, forget it then. Not a good idea. Forget it. Let's speak of the reason. You see, this is mistake number four. He gave a good reason. Kashyapa Muni gave a good reason why. You know, it wasn't like he was saying, no, I don't feel like it at the moment, just, you know. No, he gave her a good reason. Hey, no, this is dusk. Dusk is the time when Lord Shiva, who has, you know, three eyes, as is described in this purport, and he's basically virtually almost on the level of omniscience of Lord Vishnu, he's going to be traveling around, you know, in a subtle form like that. He's traveling around, followed by all these ghosts and hobgoblins and stuff like that. He's going to be aware of what we're what we're doing, and he's not going to be pleased. He's going to be displeased. It's disrespectful, right? So she pointed that out to him. She wasn't concerned about that. She wasn't concerned about that. And also, that was not a good idea because, it's not a good idea to offend elevated personalities like Lord Shiva. I mean, like, just let's remember what happened to Mani Griva and Nala Kuvara, right? Everybody remembers that story. It's that, they were sons of Kuvera. Also in, kind of in the Shiva family. They were actually bathing in some lake in Lord Shiva's property there. And they were naked. They were in the water, naked with all these girls. And they were intoxicated. Actually, they were all intoxicated. Manigriva and Nala Kuvera were intoxicated, and the girls were intoxicated, but apparently they were not as intoxicated as Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. And what happened was, Narada Muni just happened to come that way, and he saw, whoa, what's going on here? And the girls, they Super Soul kind of tipped them off. But it says they weren't intoxicated, but they weren't so intoxicated they realized what was going on. They immediately got out, covered up, But Manigriva and Nala Kuvera were so intoxicated, they were oblivious. It wasn't like they saw Narada Muni and they thought, who cares anyway, No, not even that. They were so intoxicated that they was unaware of his presence. And Narada Muni saw that and he just went, whoa, I got to teach these guys a lesson. This is like really not good. They've really gone way off track here. So it wasn't like he was trying to be cruel to them or anything like that. He cursed them. He cursed them to become the Yamalarjun, twin Arjun trees. But, when a great, great personality like Narada Muni curses somebody, there's also a benediction kind of tied in there. And they got, and as was the case in this, the benediction was that they would be, at some point in the future, Krishna would come and tear down those trees, and they would be liberated from the tree body, and they'd get, darshan of Krishna, and they became devotees after that, actually, if I remember correctly. Pure devotees, right? So, anyway, but that's the point, that's just one example. There's so many examples of how you really don't want to offend great personalities because you can get cursed. And, so she was, and she would have been aware of that. She's from that culture, but that wasn't a deterrent to her. So she was she made all those mistakes. And once again, I'm just elaborating upon how unusual this whole situation is because those are her mistakes. And then Kashyapa Muni, he also, made mistakes there. As I mentioned, he himself is considered a Shapta Rishi. His father, Marichi, one of the mentally generated sons of Brahma, is considered a Shapta Rishi. So, and he's doing his, prayer or meditation, and she's coming and, presenting her case. And, he could have easily said to her, he could have easily went, my wife or, whatever he called the Diti, look, please, it's not that, because she was, she was lusty, but also there was another motive mixed in there. She was very frustrated because her older sister, Aditi, had already given birth. She was one of the co-wives, and she'd already given birth to Indra, you see? So she was there was some envy or jealousy there as well. That was, fueling on the whole thing. So, but he could have said to her, hey, it's not like I'm not going to give you children. I'm going to give you children. Don't worry. But not right now. Just chill out and let's do this properly. He could have done that, but he didn't, unfortunately. And that's why Prabhupada refers to him in previous purport as he was not a strong man, because he could have put his foot down and said, hey, not now. Yeah, sure, no problem, but not now. But he didn't. So that was his big mistake. So I guess my point I'm leading up to is this, that taken at face value, all these things considered, we should not look down upon Kashyapa Muni and Diti, because what happened to them, barring the explanation that it's some part of some pastime and everything like that, which possibly some acharya has explained, put that perspective out there. But barring that explanation, what happened to them could happen to anybody, because Maya is that powerful. I was listening to a lecture just the other night. It was a lecture Prabhupada gave here in Los Angeles in 1971. And Prabhupada was talking about the power of Maya. And he said this. He says, he started off by going, he quoted from that song by Narottam Das Thakur, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dai. So he says, "You will not find anyone greater fallen than me." And then referring to that, he goes, "Everyone should think like that. Nobody should think that I have now passed the examination. I have become fully Krishna conscious. So my passport is now guaranteed." Prabhupada said, "No. Maya is so strong that at any moment we can fall down unless we keep ourselves very strong. She is always by your side. You haven't got to call. She is also as powerful as Krishna. She is just like Krishna, present everywhere. Similarly, Maya is also present. Just like Krishna is present everywhere, similarly, Maya is also present everywhere. She is also one of the potencies of Krishna. Just like the police department, it is as powerful as government because it is department of the government. Similarly, Maya is also another department of Krishna, so it is as powerful as Krishna." So, yeah, Maya is there, and he says she's always by our side. So it happened, these things are there for our instruction, and we should be instructed that how careful we have to be, because Maya, as Prabhupada's pointing out here, is so powerful that at any moment, anybody can kind of, until you're an absolute pure devotee, could be taken down. Nobody has any guaranteed or passports, as Prabhupada says. And of course, there's many, many examples of this as well. Two classic examples. One would be Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj was this close. He was this close. He was in Bhava, right? Which is like the stage before prema. He was this close to completely perfecting his devotional service, and he got a little bit careless, and we know the story. And another example is Ajamil, who was not, and he was near, advanced like Maharaj Bharat, but he was, Prabhupada explains in the sixth canto and also in the lectures, that he was a good Brahmin boy. He was 19, 20 years old, let's say, and he was from a Brahmin family, and he was following. It wasn't like he was rebellious or anything like that. No, he was dutiful, and he was following the Brahminical culture, but he, dhyayato vishayan pumsham, he contemplated the objects of the senses a bit too long, apparently, and he got zapped, He got zapped. He just couldn't get that woman out of his mind there, and to the point where he gave up the whole his Brahminical culture, everything. And we know the story. So, two classic examples of how powerful Maya is. So, Prabhupada, what is our protection against this? It's protection is surrender to Krishna, of course. And we hear that word a lot. And what does the word platitude mean? Platitude is like a platitude. The definition, dictionary definition of a plat. What's a platitude? Right. And sometimes it loses its meaning because. Yeah. And I think it also has. That's correct, of course. And it also has the connotation of that. You take it for granted. You just, because you're hearing it so much, to thine own self be true. That's the platitude, It is a meaningful thing, but if you say it too much and you don't think about it, and so sometimes that word surrender could get like that. We hear surrender, surrender to Krishna, surrender. We don't really, it's a very important point, it's a very important word, a very important concept, but we just sometimes,
give a lift service.
Surrender. Oh, yeah, the six symptoms of surrender. Accept what's favorable. But we're not thinking about it. Anyway, here the reason I'm mentioning that is because we should be thinking about it. We should be deeply thinking about what it means to surrender, because that's what's going to save us. So I heard this very interesting thing. Prabhupada was, once again, I believe it was a lecture Prabhupada gave here, or a conversation Prabhupada was having with some devotees here in Los Angeles, where he gives some interesting insight into what it really means to surrender. He says, and kind of like doing it from the first person, speaking about himself. He says, we have to do our business despite all hindrances, all obstacles, because we are servant of Krishna. That is the thing. We have to remain faithful to our spiritual master. And he goes on to say, we have to try our best. And he says, but as soon as the service is done with some selfish motive, personal interest, then it is spoiled. He goes, sometimes we get some honor, just like I have become spiritual master. I am getting honor. I am getting respect. But if I want to utilize your service for my personal comfort and do not actually preach Krishna consciousness, then I am another fool. That's all. But as soon as you are surrendered to Krishna, your business is done. He said that. My business is to introduce you to Krishna, to convince you some way or other that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that you should surrender unto him and you'll be happy. That is my business. So that was Prabhupada speaking about surrender. It gives us a little bit further insight. And one of the things he mentioned, is, as we heard there, is he's talking about how his business is to introduce us to Krishna and convince us some way or another that Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's talking about preaching there, and I wanted to also read something about that Prabhupada said about preaching. Because Prabhupada's vision was that preaching was not just the business, as we heard in one of the previous purports, of the sannyasis and the brahmacharis. Yeah, traditionally in Vedic culture, the sannyasis and brahmacharis, they were engaged in preaching activity, and the grihasthas were maintaining the other three orders. They maintained the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis. You know, you don't think of grihasthas necessarily as preachers, but once again, that was traditional vanashram Vedic culture. Prabhupada's vision was different. Prabhupada's vision was that, like, every member of the Krishna consciousness movement should somehow or another, you know, try to be involved in the preaching. And I'll read you this. Prabhupada says, this is once again, this is San Francisco, 1971. Says, preaching is our most important business. People are suffering for want of this Krishna consciousness. Actually, I'm going to skip ahead here. Okay. He says, our main business is preaching. Either do it as a grihastha. This is more like right to the point. Either do it as a grihastha, a sannyasi, it does not matter. This is only formality. The real work is preaching. And Prabhupada gives an example. He says, just like Ramananda Roy was a grihastha and Lord Chaitanya was a sannyasi, but he was taking lesson from Ramananda Roy. This is Chaitanya Lila. He is a sannyasi. He is God himself. He is taking lesson from a grihastha who is his disciple. So the real thing is preaching must go on sincerely. This grihastha, vanaprastha, these are material regulative principles. He says, so whatever position is suitable for you, you accept. You remain as a grihastha, you remain as a sannyasi, remain as a brahmachari, as it becomes suitable for you, but preach. That is the main business. If you are lacking in preaching and become a sannyasi, what is the use of sannyas? He says, a grihastha is better. And then he gives an example. Just like Gaurasundar, he sent him to Hawaii. He says he was just a boy, but he established a nice center there. So Prabhupada was pleased. So Prabhupada goes on to say, so that is our main criterion. We have to see in what position I can serve better Krishna. That is our policy. Otherwise, either grihastha, sannyasi, there's no difference. Yeah, basically that was it. And he basically just repeated the same thing. Sannyasi, brahmachari. He said, yeah, because It doesn't matter what we are, but whether I am preaching nicely, that is required. But still, there are some regulative principles, like sannyasi, brahmachari will be like this. You know, there's certain rules and regulations for the different ashrams. But he said that is external. Main business is preaching. So on this point, you know, it's an aspect of surrender. Okay? And just to wrap it up, the final point being that, so, you know, this is like Prabhupada's mood. You know, it's Prabhupada's his movement, and this is his vision that, you know, as much as possible, everybody should be involved in the preaching. And our advancement is dependent upon pleasing the spiritual master. Every morning we're singing, Yasya Prashadad Bhagavat Prashado, Yasya Prashadad Nagadita Gadobi. When you please the spiritual master, Krishna is pleased. You don't please the spiritual master like that. So we have to, and the verse that's sort of like, there's a very nice verse from the Bhagavatam, which confirms this point about how when, you know, if the spiritual master is pleased, Krishna is pleased, and when you please Krishna, then that's it, you've succeeded. And the verse is from the 10th canto, chapter 14, text 29, Atapite deva padambujam dvaya, prashada leisanu grihita evahi, janati tadvam bhagavan mahimno, na chanya eko pi chirim vichinvan. Yeah. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the supreme personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So by pleasing the spiritual master, Krishna's pleased, and then Krishna reveals. Everything becomes, you become successful in your spiritual life. So I think that's all I wanted to say. Does anybody have any question? Rabindranath Prabhu.
Yeah, you mentioned something about DT. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam or in the Vedic scriptures, when there's a mention of a fall down or something like that happening, that it's just because of Krishna's arrangement, like Arjuna was in ignorance, so therefore the Bhagavad Gita was spoken or like that?
Well, I'd have to do further research, to be honest with you. I was trying to point it out in the mood of, it's interesting to note, but you might remember I mentioned about possibly some previous acharyas have commented on this that particular thing, but I don't know, to be honest with you, if that, you know, yeah, Archidipa.
Shukadev Goswami's prayers, second canto, chapter 4. Namak parasmai purushaya bhuyase sat udbhavastan and niroda lilaya. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of this material world is part of Krishna's lila. So in one sense, you could say everything that happens here is lila. However, part of that lila is that he comes to take you back to Godhead. So why don't you cooperate with that lila? You see, we want to cooperate with the lila of staying here forever and trying to enjoy and defying him. Why don't we cooperate with the liberation lila, with the going back to home, back to Godhead lila? So that's what the pure devotees emphasize. Krishna's come personally. He sent us, his representatives, to invite you to go back to home, to enjoy with him, dance with him, eat with him, play with him. So why don't you cooperate with that lila? No, we want to cooperate with the staying here and rotting in material world lila. Because it's God's arrangement. It's God's arrangement, so why should I defy it? God created intoxication, so let me take it. God creation, you know, like that. That's our defiance. Let us cooperate with the going back to home, back to Godhead lila.
Jari, thank you. Maharaj, is yours a question or a comment? Okay, could you hang on for the comments? Because we've got to do the questions first. Question?
So, yeah, I had the similar question that pretty close to what Archita was mentioning. So I was thinking that we know that the whole scripture, the whole thing, all the very literatures written by Krishna, and then he's the main director. He's the one who is orchestrating everything. So he becomes a lila. So then I was thinking that if this wouldn't have happened, you know, we don't have Hiranyakashipu, and we don't have, you know, the whole story of Hiranyakashipu and Lord Nrisimhadev coming and on and on and on. So then my question was, it appears that in some ways the choices that they made, they appear to be faulty, like it was kind of like prearranged. This is my understanding. I want you to clarify it. So if it's a lila, it appears that it's like they show some weakness, because if the story was written differently, Krishna could have chosen somebody else who's stronger, mm-hmm. and that wouldn't have happened, right? But the story wouldn't go on. So the question remains there. Is that Yoga Maya interacting there in these living entities? And then their free will also is there. Wrong choices that they made.
Archita touched upon the answer, and I don't think it's black and white, but I don't feel qualified to say anything about it at this point.
Well, there's.
No, I'm just saying. I don't know what the acharyas say on this particular point.
So then, we also have this understanding that Krishna, Surya, Sama, Maya, Haya, Andhakara, Yahan, Tahan, Krishna, Mayara, Dikara.
Okay.
Krishna is like the sun, and Maya is like darkness. So when you choose Krishna, and that's the general teaching for every one of us, there's no question of Maya. But in this particular case, when they were, you know, showing those weakness and like they're devotees but not really Vaishnavas as we,
yeah,
but still, so they are under the whole story.
Yeah, okay.
Here's
the point. The only thing I could say, I think intelligent thing I could say about it is that I don't think they're in the same category as like when Arjuna was put into illusion so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, okay. Or when Maharaj Parikit. It's not like that. It's not that category. You know, it's a pastime, and it happened within a lila. It certainly is a lila. You know, Krishna wanted to fight. He couldn't. There's nobody to fight within the Vaikuntha planet, so two of his servants had to, you know, come and become demons so he could fight with them. So it's certainly a pastime, but within that pastime, I don't know if that's what was going on with Kashyapa Muni and his wife could be considered under the influence of Yoga Maya. I don't think that's the case. But I haven't really read up on it. Marge, it's questions first and then a question. Okay.
I listened to the lecture of Radhanath Swami recently, and he was mentioning that a rehearsal life in the beginning of the movement was kind of, the importance of it was diminished. He even said himself that devotees taught me that grihastha ashram is to get disappointed, so you become brahmachari, and that's where your spiritual life begins. And then he said, well, but Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us opposite. It gives us instructions of grihastha life. And then he said that without coming to the platform of goodness, of the mode of goodness, we cannot come to the transcendence. He really highlighted that. I'm in the mode of ignorance, sometimes in the mode of passion, maybe a little bit of goodness, but from that platform, it's hard for me to understand transcendence. So I started looking at this pastime from that perspective, what we can learn practically in the mode of goodness. So Diti is obviously the mode of passion. She like, I want it now. She doesn't hear a voice of reason. Like, that's it. I'm determined. Whatever happens, I don't care. And her husband looks like he was responding to her in the mode of goodness. He was respectful of her desire. He said, I hear it's important. I want to give you sons. But let's see. Right now is not a good time to get good sons. Let's wait. And she wouldn't hear. So then I feel he, like, all right, I did what I could. I explained to her, what else can I do? And then there's a coming verse when he prayed to a fate. He sent a prayer to a fate. So it looks like he thought, all right, sounds like she, like, so determined to make this mistake. Maybe she needs to make this mistake. And I'm saying because, like, in our lives, a lot of times I think, like, I know what's the best for that person. And we can teach and lead by example and be there for them. But as much we have our power, because we're not the supreme controllers, and sometimes we let these people make a mistake and see that's their path, that's what Krishna wants, that will lead them to Krishna one way or other. That's what I was looking at here from that perspective.
Okay, so that's a comment.
I guess the question, like, does it make sense, or I'm completely
I missed the question. I heard a lot of interesting stuff, but I missed the question. It sounds like a comment. But so with all due respect, I should probably move, because Maharaj has been waiting to say something, and I thought that was going to be...
Yeah, because my question is, like, does it make sense what I'm saying? Or because I'm not in a position to give a comment. So whatever I say is the question I'm looking for.
Yeah, made sense. No, you go ahead. I think you're understanding
better
than me.
I think you were describing, you were trying to reach that more of goodness. But more than that, because even the goodness, sometimes we can fail. Better just to get the advice of Krishna directly from the Bhagavad Gita. He's pointing it out that it's so difficult, Maya. Maya diakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharan. Hetunanena kontaya prakriti sarikarsati. So he's saying it's so difficult, but he is greater than Maya. He's the controller of Maya. So we have the process already. If we just have faith in the process that Srila Prabhupada gave us, then other things will, you know, you will go beyond, above goodness. Yeah, okay. But maybe, I don't know.
So I think we should probably end, because I don't want everybody to be squirming in their seats here. Thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Want to wait, I'll say, otherwise I'll forget about it. But you should also see that I'm a senior person, and I should at least have... what is that? Well, that was a comment. Yes. Yeah, so. Anyway, it's a quickie. So I won't hold you too long. The main point is this, is that, and I get this from many different devotees, and it's in the Bhagavatam, that when a person feels lust, as for example, Ajamil, he felt lust even though he's been trained on how to overcome it, but he was not able to overcome it, and he fell into it. So the point is, how do we deal with this? And it's made very, very clear that you don't deal with it. You cannot deal with it. Lust or Maya is far more powerful, but there is a means, and the means is mentioned. The means is to become a dependent servant of the Lord. Depend on God. Beg the Lord, cry out to the Lord, I'm too weak, I can't handle it, would you please give me some help? When you talk that way to the Lord, in a humble way, He gives plenty of help. And that's the main point. We often have too much pride, too much conceit, too much arrogance to pray that way, because we like to think of ourselves as knowledgeable. But when you get rid of that idea that I'm knowledgeable, as it was mentioned a little earlier, and that basically I'm a living entity, I can fall at any given moment, but on the other hand, I can also pray, I can depend, I can beg and cry out, and out of compassion, out of affection, out of love and warmth, the Lord will grant us His power to resist that. He has the power to resist it. I don't. And if He gives me that power, then I'm saved. And many people are saved. Why is Prabhupada saved all the time? He's surrounded by so many young women, but he's never affected. Because he has the power of Krishna's love on him, which resists all areas of lust.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.